Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is 7:14 now, and of course we got some rain moving in. Highs today of 65. It should clear up later after the 70% chance for showers diminishes, and the weekend is going to be spectacular. Highs of 60 and 63 Saturday and Sunday, respectively, and nothing but sunshine. So, man, if you're tailgating for the game on Sunday, it might start a little bit chilly, but that's perfect football weather. Another quick, a couple of quick notes for you, and a lighter note before we get to the heavy topic of Iran here. We have a package that you can win between now and 10 o'clock when the Black and Gold battle Minnesota, and you can win a pair of passes to the VIP tailgate experience at Benson Tower from Bullseye Event Group. And all you have to do is keep listening with me between now and 10 for Bobby Hebert to say, "I love football," and caller 8 is going to win. And the same thing with Newell Norman between 10 and 1 today. But you got to be able to pick up the tickets today. Tailgate experience, tickets to Sunday's game. We want you to be in that number, so keep listening here at WWL. Chris Fettweis joins us now, professor of political science at Tulane and a friend that's been on often to help us sort out all this Middle East stuff. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Tommy. How you doing?
I'm well, sir. First thing I'm going to start with is the guy we killed. I'm having a hard time pronouncing his name.
Suleiman.
Suleiman, and his first
Suleiman,
name?
Suleiman, yeah. Kamal Suleiman. He was the biggest of the Iranian generals.
Now, what I think, I just want to stop you here for a second, and I want people to pay attention to what's going on, which is this was the Iranian general that was killed in Baghdad, which is in
right,
Iraq.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. He was on a state visit and a secret visit because he's kind of a shadowy character to a large degree, and he's a corrupt character, not a good guy on any level, and one of our main enemies in the region for the last two decades, but also a really big figure in Iran. We had nothing similar. If you imagine kind of every general in our last few decades, if you imagine sort of David Petraeus and Norman Schwarzkopf and some kind of also quasi-religious figure all wrapped up into one.
Wow.
He's probably the second most well-known and not universally loved, but everybody at least knows him and fears him, figure in Iran. And some people said he was in line for to be the next president. But this is the kind of thing that will probably, you know, whether you loved him or hated him, if you were an Iranian, you know, he's your guy. It's going to unite the Iranians in anger at what just happened.
So in terms of selecting him, I would presume it has a lot to do with the fact that he was in Iraq at the time and not on Iranian soil. And our intelligence told us that this was the time to get him, and this was the guy to get based on what?
Well, sure. He'd been in Iraq a lot of times, though, and he'd been in our crosshairs a lot of times. We've known this guy. He was the leader of the militia, the Iranian, or the Revolutionary Guard they have, which is sort of their special forces, essentially. And he was also coordinating a lot of these Shiite militias in Iraq. They were attacking U.S. forces and U.S. personnel, and have been doing that for a decade and a half. And we've always sort of known where he was, and he's come to Iraq a lot of times. He's been in Syria. He's been around the region. President Bush and President Obama both knew where this guy was and could have pulled the trigger on something like this, sort of literally, I guess, but decided not to because they both prior presidents thought that by doing this, it would just make things worse. I guess President Trump thought otherwise.
So what is likely to happen now that we did pull the trigger?
I don't know. There's some things we can rule out, I think. I mean, I think certainly the Iranians are going to react. Certainly we've had last couple of weeks, we've had a sort of mounting protests all across Iran, and actually a couple of months. They're going to end because the Iranians now will be unified to some degree around anger. And even if the Iranian government didn't want to react, didn't want to escalate something, they're going to be under tremendous pressure to do so. And we can rule out a couple of things, though, and make people feel a little better. What the Iranians are not going to do is attack in the United States. They're not going to attack anything over here. They're not suicidal. And I would also be very surprised, based on their behavior over the decades, if they attacked any civilian targets at all. Despite what we think, you know, this is a bad regime in a lot of ways, but they're not barbarians. They're not going to be going after a civilian target. However, they probably will take revenge or perpetrate some sort of attacks on U.S. military or diplomatic personnel abroad. If I were then, and right now we're hunkering down all over the world, expecting the worst.
So did I understand you when you said that there were some protests against the Iranian government, and now, as a result of this, those protests are going to go away for the most part, and that everybody's going to be united because the United States took this guy out?
Right. In political science, we talk about this. There's a rally around the flag effect. When something bad happens, when there's a crisis or a war, the government becomes more popular. Like after 9/11, George W. Bush's approval rating was over 90% because everybody rallied around the government. We think, okay, we're all in this together. And that's likely to be the kind of reaction that the Iranians have. The reformers and the hardliners alike are going to react poorly to this, and there's going to be tremendous pressure on the Iranian regime to do something. I don't know. Yeah, sorry.
We're going to pick it up here, Chris, when we come back, and it seems like they lost the general, but it could be a net gain for them politically in terms of Iran, and did we do them in one way a favor? We'll talk about that when we come back. Chris Fettweiss, our guest, professor of political science at Tulane. It's 7:20 here at WWL, and it's time to take a look at traffic. 7:22, Tommy Tucker, WWL. The United States launched an airstrike that killed a military leader for Iran. Chris Fettweiss, our guest, professor of political science at Tulane. Was he a military leader? Was he the military leader?
Pretty much the military leader, at least in the eyes of the world, at least in our eyes, because he was the main, he was the head of the main units that would attack us. So he was our main enemy in the region. Now, the Iranians have nominally superior officers, but nobody was essentially superior to this guy. He had a direct line to the mullahs.
And we also, so we also killed a militia leader, did we not?
Yes, a couple of militia leaders, a leader of a Hezbollah group, the deputy commander of Hezbollah, and a leader of an Iraqi militia, an Iraqi Shia militia, that Suleiman was essentially controlling. This was a bad guy. We shouldn't lose sight of that. This was a terrible guy. But now what happens, I don't know. I don't know how this is part of any kind of strategic plan to make things better.
Which leads us to what I asked you about before the break, and I don't know if you want to call it a political ecosystem, cause and effect, action and reaction. But bottom line is this: what we did is going to change the political atmosphere in Iran, right? And in a way, did we do the government of Iran a favor in a roundabout way?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it from a strategic perspective, because what the president has said since we pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal is that we're going to put maximum pressure on Iran to get a better deal. And we put all these new sanctions on, and we've kind of really impoverished a lot of the Iranian people. And the hope was to get a better deal. And now that's off the table. There's no way they're going to make a deal with us now. I don't understand what our goal is. I don't understand how we're thinking this is going to make things better. Some people thought maybe we're trying to overthrow the regime, or just get people to rise up out of there because of how impoverished they are and overthrow the regime. Now, like you said, this is going to help them. This is going to solidify the regime. Imagine for us. And we have all sorts of different political opinions about, say, Mike Pence. If Mike Pence was also a general, and he was kind of a shadowy general, but everybody knew him, you might have a lot of different opinions on him. If the Iranians killed him, though, it would suddenly we'd say we would be rallied around. Hey, we can't do that to us. You can't. Our opinions on that would be unified. That's wrong. We're not going to stand for it. And that's what's happening now. So from a strategic perspective, I just don't get it.
I guess from a strategic, not long-term, but short-term perspective, what good came out of killing this guy? Because I presume he was selected as a target for some thing that he had done, and this would prevent him, obviously, from doing it again in the future. So what would put him in the crosshairs?
Right. I think the hope is sort of to send a message to the Iranians that we won't allow this kind of stuff to happen. But this isn't like Osama bin Laden. This isn't a guy running a small terrorist group. He's running an army. And they're going to have – the Iranians have an intelligence apparatus. He has a number two who's already taken over. They have plans in place. They have intelligence arms. He's just going to be replaced. So it's going to make no tactical difference. I mean, he might have been a brilliant commander, but there's plenty of other people ready to take over. So are we going to kill all of them too? I just don't get it.
What is the administration, what are they saying in terms of, or are they saying why he was targeted and what they hope to accomplish?
Yeah, well, Secretary Pompeo has been saying that there was imminent attacks on our diplomatic outposts in Iraq, and he hasn't given any sort of details about them, and that's probably true. But there have been, you know, in 2006 and 2007, there was a lot of attacks going on in U.S. forces that this guy was coordinating. But President Bush always thought it would be a step too far and too much too escalatory. It would be too dangerous to kill this guy. We've made a different calculation, assuming, and Secretary Pompeo this morning said, too, we are committed to de-escalation. I don't know how we have a weird way of showing our commitments then, I suppose, if that's the case.
Somebody texted in, and you know, a lot of people look at this emotionally, I think, and maybe, no disrespect to the texter, but maybe a lot more simply than things really are. And the text said, so we just let them keep killing our soldiers. So I think the implied part there is, well, is this going to stop them from killing our soldiers?
Yeah, if you want them to stop killing our soldiers, what could have done, we could have stayed in the Iran deal. There were no militia attacks in Iraq against U.S. personnel. There was no deaths while the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, was in place. That was working. If you like peace, if you want our soldiers not to die, we shouldn't have pulled out of that deal. All of this escalation, all these problems we're having, is because we started screwing up the relationship with Iran in 2018, pulled out of the deal, and put these sanctions on them. And they've reacted. And now we have reacted too, and it's just going to get worse. And I don't understand the strategic thinking of it. I hope I'm wrong, but I think it's going
to
get worse.
Is it, when it comes to, when it comes to, say, advancement of a nuclear program, is there any indication that Iran has violated the deal, or any indication that Kim Jong-un has backed off on developing nuclear weapons?
Certainly not Kim. He has never backed off for one second and never pledged to. The Iranians had stopped their program completely. And then when we pulled out of the deal and reassessed all and reapplied sanctions on them, and we broke the deal, then within the last 6 months or so, the Iranian leader has said, we're going to put some centrifuges back in place. We're going to essentially start the program back up. But they're not in, we're the ones who broke the deal. So you can't blame the Iranians for, from my view, for breaking a deal that was already broken.
We only have a minute left, Chris. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but who is most at danger now in terms of retaliation from the Iranians?
American military and diplomatic personnel abroad. As I said, we shouldn't worry about it here in New Orleans. The Iranians are not going to hit in the United States, and I'd be very surprised if they target civilians anywhere, actually. U.S. travelers abroad, that's not what they do. However, in our embassies and military bases across the world, we are no doubt hunkering down and expecting a retaliation.
All right, thank you, Chris. I appreciate your time. Chris Fettweiss, professor of political science at Tulane. We're going to spend some time on this. We'll talk to Major Mike Lyons, get the military aspect of this.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.